ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. And navigating what our rapidly changing world means can be tricky.
There's an argument that there's still a lot of uncertainty, isn't there, around the drivers of the global energy market?
That's why I'm joined by the sharpest political minds at the ABC to break down what each development means for Australia and how the government is positioning.
The Prime Minister's keeping his options open. He can increase that reduction or he can take it away altogether and go back to the system that where it was before the war started.
That's Politics Now with me, Patricia Carvelis. Find it on ABC Listen.
Fresh jobs data released from the Australian Bureau of Statistics this morning shows the unemployment rate has held steady, in line with economists' expectations. What might these numbers mean for the RBA's interest rate decision next month? And some Australian small business have been surprised to get reimbursements from the US government for money collected from the so-called Liberation Day tariffs. But according to Trump administration officials, the US continues to face a national emergency in trade matters, and another round of tariffs is on the way. So who and what could be back on America's levy list? Welcome to ABC Business Daily. I'm Daniel Ziffer.
And I'm the ABC's business reporter, Amelia Turzon.
Amelia, wonderful to be here. We're in a tiny studio, actually together.
It's remarkable.
We normally sit at the desk next to each other. I think this is going to be just the same, although, fingers crossed, less defamatory.
Yeah, we'll be kind.
Amelia, the job numbers are in. We're recording about midday Eastern Standard Time. You've just come off News Channel where you have examined these. What are the numbers?
Yeah, so I spoke to the chief economist of NAB, Sally Auld. She noted the jobs figures held steady, 4.4%. Not a huge surprise that the figures held steady. The top line thing that she said to me that has stuck with me is the RBA expected this figure to be around 4.2% right now compared to 4.4%. So while any number with a 4 in front of it is positive for the labour market, it does show that things have gotten a little bit looser in the jobs market and the economy overall.
The RBA is a brutally cold instrument. Mm. They want more people unemployed so that there is, theoretically, more availability in the labour market and less competition.
So you said very delicately what they like to say is Nauru or Nehru?
Nehru?
Nehru.
Nehru.
I get confused. And exactly that. There is this theory that you need a certain amount of people jobless, unemployed, to keep prices down.
So the Nauru is the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment. This is the theoretical number that no one has ever nailed down in reality where you have an unemployment level where it doesn't push up inflation. That's what they're seeking. They have changed over time their definition of what full employment is. Let's not forget that the RBA's mandate is to do two things. One is to keep inflation under control, so the rate of cost prices, but also to keep Australians in full employment. Mm. But they are worried about this concept where if there isn't unemployment at a certain level, if there aren't a pool of workers available desperate to start at a moment's notice, that inflation will rise higher.
Well, firstly, Dan, congratulations on getting out that acronym in full. And yes, that's correct. This is the brutal reality of how our central bank works. They want a certain amount of people in the economy, not jobless, they'd say, but looking for work to keep prices down. So obviously this 4.4% number, as Sally Auld noted, it is slightly higher than what the RBA was forecasting for this period. And this does come just a week before we get inflation data. So that data the RBA is watching so closely when it decides if it's going to hike interest rates or lower them. Firstly, inflation next week, Dan. What are we thinking?
Well, it's hard to tell because so much of inflation has been driven by petrol. Mm. They came down again, it kind of normalised despite the fact that this conflict was rolling on. We have seen, as I've been doing finance this week, kind of 5% day on day increases in crude oil as markets start to go, actually, maybe this conflict is not going to end. And also huge problems with refinery capacity, as we've discussed on the pod before. Now, the RBA's measure of inflation trims out these volatile items and kind of moderates them, but I still think it's really difficult to tell how much is it going to go down because whilst people have vastly less money, they're paying a huge proportion of Australians paying big repayments on debt, on housing debt. A further third of Australians rent where they live. Rents keep going up. They're taking more and more people's pay packets. So that's reducing the amount of money that people have to spend. But yet, you look at data like the Commonwealth Bank's Household Spending Index, one of my favourite sets of data.
You love that data.
I do. Well, it's 7 million anonymised bank accounts. So this is really a look into the wallets. And what it keeps showing me is that people over the age of 55, people over the age of 65, are outspending inflation. So they're not spending as much as they were a year ago to deal with the fact that things cost that much more now. They are spending far beyond that. Now, I think a lot of it is going to be giving money to their children to make their lives work. But we have these competing forces where you've got the RBA trying to get inflation down, trying to take the heat out of the economy, trying to make people spend less and get supply and demand to match up. And then you have a whole other cohort who are getting their incomes boosted by higher interest rates because they get better return from their deposits and their investments. And all the signals to them are like, happy days, live your life.
It's also really interesting to me how companies are responding to the oil shock. So I'm actually digging into for a feature at the moment. What are the everyday items in life like bread, plane tickets, your ride share? What are they doing at the moment, 5 months on from the closure of the Strait of Hormuz? Like, have we seen this massive inflationary shock? We've heard 4 months ago when the Strait of Hormuz was closed, we had so many oil analysts come out and say by now, by May, there would be this massive oil crunch. Prices could be anywhere up to
$200 a barrel.
150, 200. Everything was going to be more expensive. And then the market just didn't quite respond like this. And despite the fact that inflation has been rising and we are expecting to still see those massive shocks in our data when it comes out next week, as I've done my digging, there are just some parts of the pricing that haven't quite appeared like this yet. I know from speaking to so many sorts of companies that they are facing pressures on their supply side, how long it's going to take for those companies to pass that through to us as consumers is interesting. Worth noting, I'll give you a little tidbit out of this story. There are some things that companies jacked up at the start of the oil shock. And despite the oil prices easing significantly, the jacked prices are still in place. Does that surprise you, Dan?
If you could see my face right now, my jaw is detached from my body and is sitting on the floor of this room. And be like, I cannot believe that people would raise prices due to an oil shock on the other side of the world. And then when the shock subsides, not lower them in a commensurate manner.
It's because they say we could still face another one, Dan.
they're preparing for future problems. You can justify anything. I love it. So an element that has fascinated me in the past few years is our participation rate. We have almost never had this high a proportion of people working. So people of adults of working age are working. People who are older are working longer. More of them are working a greater percentage. How much does the cost of living crisis that we're in appear to be inducing people to look for more work to participate in the workforce?
Well, it's interesting because the ABS has noted with this latest round of jobs figures that more people starting work in June. I was also, as I was speaking to Sally Auld from NAB, I put to her this idea of, are people just staying in their jobs right now? Like, if the economy is feeling pretty unstable, uncertain, we don't know what's going to happen with pricing, oil, war, you might just stay in your job. That could be part of these figures.
It's been a huge aspect of the Australian economy in recent years. Job switching is at multi-decade lows. People starting businesses, people becoming sole traders, at immense lows. We have a less dynamic personal economy because that fear is there of switching, even though we all know that the easiest way to make more money is to switch jobs. Amelia, we are probably not the best people to talk about job switching. We have both been at the ABC for more than a decade.
It's true. We've been here a while.
Amelia, you've had reporting out recently about Australian small businesses who, to their great surprise, have received money back from the US government. Now, this is after Donald Trump's Liberation Day tariffs. They were ruled unconstitutional by the US Supreme Court in February. What's been happening?
Yeah, bit of a good news story for exporters in Australia. Some exporters, it must be said. So wind back that day with Donald Trump and his big board. May 2025, those 10% reciprocal tariffs, they were ruled unlawful, unconstitutional. A US Supreme Court found earlier this year he did not have the right as the president to enact them so widely without the approval of Congress. So this has meant that the Customs Department in America has had to refund more than $100 billion in the biggest single refund in their history. And some of that money is coming back to Australian companies who had to pay these tariffs.
Now, this was a hugely astonishing moment. I remember it injected so much uncertainty into the world economy. It was essentially a dismantling of rules that we had had for decades, pretty much since World War II, had kind of built the economic development of most OECD nations. They were ripped apart in front of our eyes, you know, particularly for those poor penguin-filled islands that were taxed as well. So for businesses that did export, this was astonishingly disruptive at the time. Mm. This is something of a resolution.
Absolutely. So you're right, Dan. Businesses are used to import duties. They're used to having to navigate different market rules. But having that sort of change put on you and your company's business model essentially overnight, and for it to be changed and switched and moved as the tariff situation in the States has done so much the last year, it is very destabilizing for a company's planning, their cash flow. I actually had this one business I spoke to. They're a swimwear fashion brand. They said to me that the last year has just been stomach-curdling stress. They said that when they had goods trying to go into the States that were impacted by those so-called Liberation Day tariffs, they just didn't know where they'd get the money from.
Yeah.
They're a mum and dad startup from Brisbane with a baby, and they luckily had just had enough cash flow in their accounts from having just made a big sale that they could then pay the tariffs to get the goods in for this big chance they'd just taken on the United States market. So very, very stressful. And you'd think that that would be companies who do toys, I've spoken to, companies who sell manufactured bigger items. So for this company, that swimwear brand, to now get back this money. He said he just thought that what Donald Trump says is what Donald Trump says. Yeah, it looks illegal, but, you know, it's Donald Trump. So to get that money back, wild.
How good's the rule of law? Like, they literally got a check.
Literally got a six-figure check, this company called Nashi, and they said that they just didn't believe it till they saw it in the account. But here is the kicker. I just love this kicker so much, Dan. They got 6% interest back because Donald Trump's unlawful tariffs have become a massive financial liability for his government. They have had to pay back these tariffs, and they are only halfway done from more than $100 billion. They've had to pay them back with 6 to 7% interest. So this is a liability that is pushing their deficit further into the red.
So, Amelia, companies get this money back. Where does it go?
So, firstly, when companies paid these tariffs, they didn't actually always pay these tariffs. Sometimes they just put the tariff straight on to the customer who made the purchase, maybe through online shopping. Sometimes they did absorb the tariffs when they bought them wholesale into the market. They worked with retailers to absorb or maybe just partially pass it on. It's a little bit complicated with how companies actually dealt with this tariff. Nashi says to me, that's the fashion swimwear brand that just got its refund. They said to me they mostly tried to absorb the tariffs, but said, yeah, we did have to pass on a bit of it to survive. And they've said that now they've got that cash back, it's really complicated to give all of your customers, like, you know, how do you figure out what 5, 10% of the tariff they get? How do you give them that refund? Do you give them a voucher? They've just said it's easier for them at this stage, they think, to reinvest in the business. But it's obviously a controversy. If you're a customer, you think I paid this tariff and now the company keeps it? How do you deal with that? And in fact, Nintendo, if you remember Donkey Kong, they are currently in a big news story because they are receiving one of these really big tariff refunds. and their customers are not happy. They want that money back.
Well, in a lawsuit, it's been brought essentially on behalf of consumers saying, give us our money back. Nintendo says the tariffs were sweeping and changing and they just had to raise the prices. Mm. And essentially they can't return it to consumers in a simple way.
Exactly. So that's the deliberation for companies from what I'm hearing is, how do you get this money back to them? Like, do you give them, if I was a smart company owner and I didn't want to have to do this weird complicated refund in some cases, I'd maybe give them vouchers or, you know, shop with us 50% off. I don't know how companies are going to deal with this. It's
Amelia,
very complicated.
Have you thought about just keeping the money?
I think that's happening.
The Trump officials have complained that some Canadian provinces have stopped buying US alcohol and that Canada has different tariffs and quotas on things like cars and American cheese. So they're looking at putting substantial tariffs on their direct world's longest land border neighbor on a range of exports, things like wine, cement, plywood, paper, like big stuff.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Dan, I can't keep up with the latest tariffs, but I do recall that very early in the piece with Liberation Day, Canada was a really big sore point. I remember speaking to alcohol companies that were fiercely defending their alcohol exports. It is obvious that despite the Liberation Day tariffs being deemed unlawful, actually another round of tariffs put in place, the Section 122 tariffs, just expiring now. They are now being challenged again in the courts. We've now had all of these tariffs, but worth noting, I put in a question to the White House and they responded, I was shocked, and they said that they maintain that Donald Trump's tariffs are bringing them money. They're stopping wars, they claimed. And it appears that despite all of these legal challenges, it is very much a part of his toolbook.
Well, with a potential 50% tariff on a lot of goods from Canada, we'll find out what happens down the track. We might be discussing this with about a maple syrup company in a year from now.
I'm sure we will.
That's it for today's episode of ABC Business Daily. Tomorrow, be sure to catch That's Business with Alan Kohler, who'll be sitting down with Gina Cass-Gottlieb, the chair of the ACCC, to talk about how the regulator protects consumers and competition, about past mistakes, future plans, and why Australia seems to have just two of everything. I'll be back in your feeds on Monday. Remember, to never miss an episode, make sure you're following ABC Business Daily on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to send us a question, email abcbusinessdaily@abc.net.au. That's ABC Business Daily, or one word, at abc.net.au. Amelia, lovely to chat. Catch you back at our desk shortly.
My pleasure.